In one of your essays from your latest book, Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls, you described books at your childhood friend's house as lying open on the sofa, the words still warm from being read. Have you always had a love for reading and writing, even as a child?
No, I was not. Writing, I guess I just thought of writing as homework. It was like everybody else. I would have a story due. Oh, can you hold on? Someone's knocking my door.
Sure.
I'm so sorry.
That's fine.
Damn it, I'm sorry. There was someone at the door. I just hung my do not disturb sign out there. That's a problem when you're staying in a nice hotel. They just always knock at the door. Can we give you some graham crackers we made by hand? Just coming to check and see if all your hangers are polished. Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. I don't even... What was I saying?
I think we were talking about... Oh, if you've loved reading or writing since childhood.
Yeah. I think I was like most other children, and writing to me meant homework. And so if I had a paper due, I would put it off and put it off until the night before it was due. And then, you know, I wrote the way I was taught to write, and I would think, oh, I need a topic sentence. And really, writing didn't become pleasurable until I started doing it for an audience of no one, until mm-hmm. I knew that it was not going to be judged or heard or critiqued by anyone, and that it could be however, that it could, I could write however I wanted to. At that point, it became interesting to me. And I wasn't a big reader. I would read things for homework, but I didn't start really reading in earnest until I dropped out of college. And I was living in Oregon, and I was living in a little town, and I didn't have any friends. And I got a library card, and I started reading then. And to me, that has everything to do with writing, you know. Like, you can live in a little hamlet in the middle of nowhere and never have been to an art museum in your life, and you can create visual art, you know, like the world's full of really great folk artists, mm-hmm. but you can't write that way. There aren't folk readers. I mean, mm-hmm. there aren't folk writers, because if you kind of need to know what the insides of books look like if you're going to write.
And who are some of the authors that have informed you, or what genres do you like reading?
Well, right now, like, I enjoy reading a book that just really excited me that I didn't realize it was out. But there's a fellow named Blake Bailey who writes biographies. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a great biography of Richard Yates, who is one of my favorite writers. And his Yates biography probably came out about 8 years ago. And it was fascinating to me because I realized reading it that Richard Yates was kind of writing nonfiction, actually. You know, that the novels he wrote were so clearly based on his life. Mm-hmm. That he was so very much like the characters that he wrote about. And now he's written a biography, and I just got it yesterday, of the guy who wrote The Lost Weekend. And he wrote a great biography of John Cheever. But I like books. I like nonfiction books about horrible things, you know, like about people who have, like, terrible diseases or live in garbage dumps or cut their legs off just because they felt like it. You know, I love a book like that. And I read novels as well, but, like, a good book about someone whose life is really horrible, well, that'll grab my attention every time.
Does that extend into other forms of art? Like, do you like photography with that same...
I sure do.
Okay. What is your writing process like, and how do you decide which... I mean, you write every day. How do you decide what becomes a published piece?
Well, like, I have a story that came out in The New Yorker today, and I invited three of my sisters to England for Christmas. And I didn't invite them in order to write about it. And, you know, but I write in my diary every day. And I think when I looked back over their visit, you know, they had been gone for probably about 2 months, right? So it was probably maybe March, 3 months. In March, I was reading over my diary of their visit, and all of a sudden it seemed to shape itself into a little story for me. It was just sort of about, it wasn't about Christmas. The story is really not about Christmas at all. It's just about visitors and about growing older. And I wrote it, and I started this tour that I'm on April 2nd. And so I read the story out loud on the second night of my tour, and it worked pretty well. And so I went back to the hotel room, and I rewrote it, and then I read it again, and then I rewrote it, and reread it, and rewrote it. So I tried to make sure it wasn't the same any two nights. There were certain things that were just basically joke lines, you know, that I could change until I found absolutely the right words to use. And then probably I'd been reading it for a month, probably, and I sent it to my book editor to look at, and she made some suggestions, and then I rewrote it, and then I sent it to my editor at The New Yorker, and they bought the story, and then my editor had some suggestions, little suggestions, and then, you know, the New Yorker has its own grammar rules, and grammarians get involved, and, you know, so it changed even more. And then it came out today. What I'll do is, there's certain grammar changes that the New Yorker made that it just doesn't sound right coming out of my mouth. So I'll come up with my version. I'll take the New Yorker version and the last version that I read on stage, and I'll sort of come up with a little Frankenstein version that I'll continue to read out loud, and then I will probably put in my next book.
So this story happened to have your sisters in it. Did they get to read it before it was published?
Yes.
Okay.
So I sent it to them. Hugh doesn't like reading something before it's published. But then Hugh knew that the fact checkers were going to call. So he said, well, I'll just agree with whatever they ask me. Because he would rather read it there. But like my sister Gretchen, there's a line in the... I quoted her in the story, and it's a line that I think to a lot of people might sound like, oh my God, I can't believe that you're letting the world know that about your sister. But it was a line that Gretchen knows it's funny. I mean, the line gets a huge laugh, but it's really her laugh. It's not my laugh. Mm-hmm. And people aren't laughing at her. It's her line. It's really, and I'm clearly quoting her. You know, she gets a nice big laugh, but it's completely her laugh, so she didn't have any problem with it.
How did your family react when you first started publishing stories about them, since you write about them so much?
A lot of times I meet people, or my sisters will meet people, like my sister Lisa will go to a dinner party and someone will say, oh, you know, I know all about you. But they don't. They only know what she wants them to know, right? I met Sarah Vowell's sister not too long ago, and I thought, gosh, I know you, but all I know is that she has a son and that her father made a cannon. That's all I really know about her. So people don't know anything that my family doesn't want them to know.
They're obviously depicted well, and it's funny, and you're saying that they get to have a read before it's published. I just didn't know, since they are subjects, if they enjoy reading about themselves or maybe they don't.
My brother, Paul, he loves being written about, just loves it, right? And Hugh's mother doesn't mind, but she said to me recently, she said, I don't recognize myself in the stories that you write about me. So it's just not how she... I mean, Hugh certainly recognizes his mother in those stories, but it's not the way that she thinks of herself.
Well, that tends to be different anyway.
Well, but I see, I don't know, like, I don't read anything about myself, right? I don't read interviews that I've given. I don't, every now and then someone will come up and say, we've met before and I wrote a little story about it. I wrote about it on my blog and I wanted to give you a copy. And a couple of years ago, I read one of those, and then I thought, nope, not going to do that anymore. So, because it's, maybe it was the same thing. Maybe I didn't recognize myself in it. I mean, sometimes people can, I mean, one thing amateur writers tend to do a lot is prescribe motives to the people they're writing about, right? Like, so let's say I checked into my hotel a while ago, and if I were to write that the woman behind the counter was obviously disinterested in me, that would be kind of amateurish because I'm not providing any evidence. It's better just to describe the encounter and then let the to show it, right? It's better to show it.
Right.
And so a lot of times people can come to get a book signed or they'll say, oh, you hate me because I'm asking you to sign a paperback book. And I'll say, I don't actually draw that distinction. It's a book in front of me. So people can broadcast their insecurity or their issues or whatever onto you. So that's one of the reasons I don't read anything.
About yourself.
Yeah.
Some of your works in your latest book and others as well aren't first person accounts but are written from the perspective of a character you've created. How is writing those pieces different from recounting something that's happened to you?
Well, usually a lot of those, I go on these lecture tours twice a year. And so I read in theaters. You know, I go to the theater and the lights go down and everyone's in a comfortable seat and I read for an hour and then I answer questions for a half an hour. And the stories, the little nonfiction stories in the book, were all written for various lecture tours. And often they were written as political satire, right? Because I don't want to necessarily get up there and talk about the way that I voted. Or you can say something that's really not that clever and you can get a big round of applause for it, but you didn't say anything clever. It's just that people voted the way you vote. And that's not so interesting to me. But sometimes I still have stuff I want to get off my chest. And so that's kind of a nice way to do it, I think, is to write it in the voice of a character. And then, but they're not all politically motivated. Like there's a story in there written in the form of an email. And it's a woman writing to another woman to thank her for the wedding present, which was a gift certificate for two pizzas. And I didn't know where that story was going. I just started it. I'm not a plotter. So sort of I discovered the nature of that relationship just as the reader discovers it. At one point I realized that one of them had been, this fellow they were talking about was the ex-husband of the person who's being written to. And I made a little noise like, oh. And then later at the end of the story, I realized that their relationship is even more complicated than that. And I went, oh. And so it's kind of nice because the audience makes that same noise. They're discovering it just as I discovered it. I like that. I like people who are passionate. You know, even if I don't agree with them, they just always have my ear. I love people who are convinced of themselves, maybe because I'm not. I'm so full of doubt, and I try to look at everything from both points of view, and I back down really easily in any kind of an argument. I just love listening to a person who's with conviction. And so a lot of the characters who are the narrators of those monologues are people with conviction.
You're very good at describing people like the ones we were just talking about, and passionate people and engaging readers. In Squirrel Seeks Chipmunk, you used animals. Is it that animals are inherently funnier, or did you get tired of using humans? Why the decision to use animals that time?
Somebody had given me an audiobook, and it was a collection of South African folk tales. What I liked about them was that if you were to say the hyena and the giraffe, right? Well, everyone knows what a hyena and a giraffe look like. So you don't have to describe them. You say the hyena and the giraffe went on a picnic, and you're right there in the story. Whereas if you're writing a story about people, you know, you have to describe them, and you have to give their economic backgrounds, and, you know, there's a lot of shading that has to be done. But if you just say the hyena and the giraffe, then you're just... And money's really not an issue with hyenas and giraffes. You're just sort of into the story. And that was what I liked about it. And I didn't name any of the animals in my book. It was the cat and the baboon or the parrot and the pot-bellied pig. I don't know. There was just something really pleasing to me about that.
You seem to like animals a lot, or at least be interested in them from your stories. Why the title, Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls?
Well, I was on a book tour a couple of years ago, and a woman came up to get a book signed, and she said, I want you to make this book out to my daughter, and I want you to write to Jennifer, explore your possibilities. And I don't like writing what people tell me to write. I kind of feel like this is what I do for a living. Really, I think my ideas are better than yours in this regard. You know what I mean? I'm the professional here. So I said, well, I'll keep the word explore. And so I just, I don't know, I wrote, let's explore diabetes with owls. It just kind of came out. And then I thought, I'm going to write a book and give it that title.
Did she seem happy with it when you gave her the book?
People who are that specific are rarely happy with your alternative, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess I just don't understand it. Well, there have been twice in my life that I've written what people have told me to write. Once I was in Mississippi, and this young man came up, and he wrote, let's say his name was Kevin, and he wanted me to write, to Kevin, you were like a son to me. And it was just the sweetest thing in the world. And so I was delighted to write that in his book.
Mm-hmm.
And then once a woman wanted me to write to her mother, I'm sorry, I tore your vagina.
What?
And so I thought, that's good, that's a keeper. So I did that. But generally, they're just not things that I would say. A lot of people want me to write in their book, keep laughing. And I wouldn't do that. It sounds conceited. Like that I know that they're going to read my book and laugh. And it just doesn't sound good.
Do you think that some people act more interesting around you in hopes of becoming a story?
People often say, oh, I got them to pull out the notebook. And I didn't realize that they'd been trying to get me to pull out the notebook. But like one of the reasons I pulled my notebook out yesterday, I met this woman and she's a high school teacher. Her last name is Drydyke, okay? Drydyk. And when she says, my name is Mrs. Drydyke, her students laugh and she says, I know it. No vowel. It's funny, right? No vowels. She pretends like they're laughing because there are no vowels in her last name. And I don't know, that just seemed wonderful to me. And so I pulled out my notebook and I wrote it down.
Do you always pull out your notebook and write things during the moment and then write again later? Or do you stop and write everything you're thinking at that time?
I pull out my, I mean, I was with a funny, you know, a funny fellow drove me to Chicago from Minneapolis, from Milwaukee, and he said quite a few funny things, like we stopped and then we stopped and then we were getting back into his car, and I went in to the wrong car and tried to open the door because I didn't remember what his car looked like, and he said, I think I'll take my car. It was just so funny how he said it. And so I wrote that down, and then I told him, too, that, because a lot of times people ask me, why did you leave France for England? Mm-hmm. And it's because I realized I don't like people who like France. And he said, oh, you're a Francophobophile. And I thought, God, how did I not think of that? That's exactly what I am. So I pulled out the notebook several times with him. And he and I, well, he gave me a ride yesterday, too. And so I pulled it out yesterday to write down a lot of the things that he said. You know, the things that he said today, like Francophobophile.
Mm-hmm.
I'll write that tomorrow morning when I get up. So I just keep my notebook with me all day, and I write things down. And then tomorrow morning, I'll kind of look over everything in my notebook, and I'll decide what my lead story is. And I'll lead with that. And then maybe some things that I wrote down today, tomorrow morning, I'll be like, I don't know why I wrote that down. It's not that interesting to me.
And you travel a lot, obviously, for your job and have lived in several places. Do you find something interesting or memorable about every place you visit?
Well, one thing I noticed about Arkansas, because I think the last time I was there, I was driven to where I was going next. And I just noticed all the billboards had either Jesus or catfish on them. I mean, I don't normally get to see a lot when I'm on tour, but I get to talk to people, and often think that that's kind of, I sort of rather talk to people than see things.
What is your typical day like?
I like to get up at 10:30, and Hugh gets up probably at, I don't know when he gets up. I'm asleep. Maybe he gets up like at 6 or 6:30. I don't know what he does. He just likes having the world to himself in the morning, and I have it to myself at night. So I go to bed pretty late, and I get up at 10:30, and I just go right to my desk.
Mm-hmm.
And at around 1 o'clock, we have lunch. And then in the afternoon, I go and I pick up rubbish on the side of the road for a couple hours. Then I make my way back home. And
always in the same area?
No, I do it on my bike, and then sometimes I do it on foot. Where we live in England, it's really beautiful, but people throw so much stuff out their car windows. It's just so disheartening. And it just really bothers me. So I just go and I clean it up. I used to just do it completely on my own, but now your local government there is called your local council. So they've given me a little outfit to wear, and they've given me bags. I mean, they love me. Sometimes I go out with some juvenile delinquents, clean the roads with them.
Wait, how do you get hooked up with the juvenile delinquents?
The council hooks me up with juvenile delinquents. They call them naughty boys. I'll go out with a team of naughty boys. And I'm always I always want to know what they did, but I don't want to be a jerk, you know, by asking them about it. And so I just pretend that they're not naughty. And, you know, they're usually pretty good about picking up rubbish. And sometimes people have bins out front of their house in the country, you know, for trash day. And I'll put my trash in there, too. And I feel like I'm not going to feel bad about it because I think they should be thanking me for keeping their road clean.
So if you do this most days and you have family visiting, or does Hugh ever join you in the trash collection?
Hugh rides his bike into the village every morning to go to the village shop. And so it's like a mile from our house to the village shop. So that's Hugh's territory. And so Hugh keeps that clean. But every now and then I'll walk into the village and I'll say to Hugh, how many bags of trash do you think I filled into the village? He says, it's clean. I said, no, it's not. It's bike clean. But when you're on foot, you notice a lot more than you do on your bike.
After hours of doing that, what's next in the day?
Well, then sometimes I go to the fitness center. Mm-hmm. There's a little fitness center near us, and I'll focus on fitness. That's what I call it. At 8 o'clock, I go back to work, and I work for like an hour and a half, and then we have dinner. Then I'm usually done with work by that time. So I might watch some RuPaul's Drag Race. You know, I mean, that's a good thing about the internet, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can be out in the country and you can just download things. And you don't, you know, it's not like you have to have a TV anymore. And I can listen to the radio. I can listen to public radio on my computer. You know, so I listen to that while I take a bath. Like I asked someone the other day, I said, what do I need to be watching?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, Tabitha Takes Over. And so I started, and I can't stop watching Tabitha Takes Over now. My name is Tabitha, and I'm taking over.